The sheer density of Hong Kong's maze of apartment blocks, alleyways, and markets meant that few residents were untouched by the government's forceful suppression of the protests. Almost 90% of the population had been tear-gassed. It could happen while you waited for a late-night snack of fishbowl noodles, on a Sunday afternoon stroll along the waterfront, or even while sitting at home, as stinging clouds drifted up from the street, leaching through window frames and air conditioning vents. 1/3 of Hong Kong residents showed signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. It sometimes felt like the government was at war with its people. It felt personal, too. The issue of belonging has always been a complicated one for me, as a half-English, half-Chinese person who was born in England but brought up in Hong Kong. My family had moved to Hong Kong when I was 5, so that my Singaporean father could take up a civil service job. So while I'm not a native Hong Konger, I was made by Hong Kong. I was shaped by Hong Kong values, in particular a respect for grinding hard work and stubborn determination. Hong Kongers called it Lion Rock Spirit, after a popular television series about a squatter colony living at the foot of a local landmark, a small mountain topped by a rocky formation resembling a Chinese lion crouching down, poised to leap. To me, Lion Rock Spirit translated into a willingness to fight to protect my values, no matter how powerful the opponent. During the decade that I'd been based in China as a journalist, that compunction drove me to write the stories that I felt needed telling, no matter how politically sensitive they were. It prompted me to leave Beijing in order to write a book about the Communist Party's bloody suppression of the 1989 protest movement in China, and how it had managed to excise those killings from the collective memory. I knew the book would prevent me from returning to China for many years, but I also knew it was a story that should be told. In journalistic terms, protest movements were my bailiwick, but I never, in my wildest dreams, imagined one would so thoroughly engulf my beloved hometown. Once it did, there was no question in my mind that I had to cover it. I was already living in Hong Kong on research leave from my job teaching journalism in Melbourne when the protests broke out. After I went back to work in Australia, I regularly returned to Hong Kong on short reporting trips until COVID-19 closed our borders. How to practice ethical journalism under the circumstances? Until this point, I'd unquestioningly followed the accepted journalistic practice of trying to remove myself from the story as far as possible. But could I remove myself from the picture when the picture was already part of me? I've been grappling with this for months without any clear answer. That day, on the rooftop, the question answered itself. I knew all the reasons why I should stay sitting on the sidelines, but I also knew that I wasn't going to. Driven by gut instinct, I stood up and walked over to take a paint pot for myself. I knew I was crossing a line from neutral reporter to voluntary participant in an act of protest, and that in doing so, I was violating the cardinal tenet on which I'd based a quarter century of journalistic endeavour. But I also realised at that instant that I didn't care.